Hi, I'm Mike Field.
I'm Mike Butler.
And you're listening to the Forgotten Cinema Generic Ad.
Join us every Wednesday as we talk about films that seem to be forgotten by audiences, whether it be because a more popular movie was released at the same time or the film simply didn't catch on with an audience in its initial run. We'll discuss what we love about the film, maybe don't love about it, but we'll always recommend you revisit it. You never know, you might find your own forgotten gem. Forgotten Cinema is available wherever you get your podcasts or at ForgottenCinemaPodcast.com or ForgottenEntertainment.com, as we are a proud part of the Forgotten Entertainment family.
I swear I talk more in the episodes.
Hello there. I'm Colleen.
I'm Anders.
And I'm Daniel.
We're three nerds that met through our love of science fiction and fantasy storytelling. Of course, one of our favorites is George Lucas's signature achievement, Star Wars.
And if there's one thing the internet definitely doesn't have enough of, it's nerds talking about Star Wars. So here we are with yet another Star Wars podcast, where each week we discuss one of the films in the current Star Wars canon.
From the sands of Tatooine to the levels of Coruscant, we cover it all. Yet another Star Wars podcast is available wherever you get your podcast and is part of the Forgotten Entertainment family.
Hello, and welcome to the Nomcast, the Netflix original movie podcast. I am your host, Andrew Morgan. You can follow the show at NomcastPod on Twitter and Instagram, and you can check us out on the web at NomcastPod.com. All right, movie lovers unite to see the awards night you care so much about go completely off the rails. Last night was the 94th Academy Awards, and while there is plenty to talk about as far as the winners and losers and what it means about the industry with streaming versus theatrical or Netflix versus the competition once again, the night will be largely defined, however, by Will Smith, Chris Rock, and to borrow a phrase from everywhere on the internet, the slap heard around the world. A truly incredulous evening, to say the least. We will break down all those major aspects of the night and, of course, Coda's historic win with one of our favorite award season correspondents, the Duke of Bedingham himself, Mr. David Long. Welcome back, good sir. I hope you've had some rest after an extremely long night for most of us who care about the Oscars.
Yeah, thanks so much again for having me on, Andrew. Really appreciate it. I managed to get a couple of hours sleep in. The show finished here about 4:30, I think, a.m. But I've got to say, with the nature of what happened in the show, time just sort of didn't seem to exist. I lost all sense of reality and time. Honestly, it was like I talk about multiple universe theories. The universe I was in last night, I did not like. It was very strange. It was very bizarre. We're obviously going to touch upon it, but appreciate you having me on and looking forward to it.
Yeah, you're an animal, man. Like, it ended very late, of course, your time. And then I see you in, like, everybody's Twitter spaces, just, like, looking for answers, looking for recaps, chiming in yourself. You're an animal, man. I was in there, too, a little bit, just to kind of listen to hear the instant takes, the instant reactions. But, you know, wow, you're nuts with a 5-hour difference there in the UK.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long award season. So I had a lot of Red Bull. I just want to say, I mean, I don't want to sort of advertise stimulants on your show, but I was more caffeine than I was man. And yeah, obviously with what happened, I wanted to jump on some spaces and interact with the community, the Oscars community, and try and get my head around what on earth happened at the 94th. It will be remembered as one of the most bizarre, shocking, and possibly memorable, for the wrong reasons, Oscars in the modern era.
Yeah, and honestly, I do feel bad for a bunch of people with that sentiment. I feel bad for Coda, who obviously, had all that momentum into a, like we said, a historic win last night. I feel bad for Questlove, who had to come up and accept an award in the chaos of last night. Even though people from Philadelphia completely loved everything about what happened in that exchange from Will Smith being a hometown Philly guy, and then Questlove being a hometown Philly guy. It was like this weird, bizarre turnaround, all within a few minutes, all for people from Philadelphia. So shout out to any of my listeners from that area. Let's get to that real quick. Let's get to the show kind of itself. And, it was something that was going to be defined by the Will Smith versus Chris Rock thing. And I told you up top, I almost didn't want to talk about it because every show is going to talk about it. It's not exactly my strong suit to dive into, you know, people's mental health or assault on television that went, you know, unharmed or unpunished, so to speak. It's a weird place to be. I'm sure it put you in a shocking place as well as the crowd that was in there that I don't envy whatsoever, especially, I believe Lupita Nyong'o was right behind there and people were kind of using her face as like a gauge of what is actually happening. So I felt bad for her too, as well. Your instant reaction now, especially like kind of the morning after reaction to what you saw there and the unfortunate thought of like, this is now defining these Oscars.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing is to say it's with Coda, with the deaf community on the stage there getting recognition. It is a tragedy that the Oscars has been overshadowed by this event. And my first feeling when I was there was just absolute shock. Like, I could not believe what I was seeing. I was, my jaw hit the floor and I was lost for words. And that shock was shortly followed by anger, really, because this is not acceptable. Like, from where I'm sitting, I've listened to lots of different angles and people trying to defend Will Smith. And I think the first thing to say is what was said by Chris Rock clearly was, many would say, across the line. But, you know, two wrongs don't make a right. Do you know what I mean? It's so the immediate response was just complete shock and then anger. And just the thought of if this was to happen in any comedy club around the world and people have different opinions about what is acceptable in comedy. Some people say everything's open. You know, it's a free for all. It's fair game.
Right.
But if an audience member was to walk onto stage in any comedy club, as far as I'm concerned, around the world and assault someone, you know, they would be arrested. There would be repercussions, potential legal action. And this is someone that's a global figure. He had to do better. And it was pretty much, you know, slam dunk that he was going to win the Oscar. So he knew his speech was coming and he could have touched upon it in the speech. He could have talked about how he thought the joke was too much, too far. He could have spun it in his favor and talked about love as he did, which I thought was bizarre on the back of his actions. I have slept on it and I have calmed down a bit and I'm probably a little bit more not tolerant because I stand by my opinion that it's absolutely wrong. But maybe it's not as dramatic as I first thought, in the sense that I thought it was not only a career defining moment, but potentially a life defining moment, in the sense that will Smith forever be remembered as that guy who slapped someone at the Oscars? And will it completely overshadow decades of great work?
Yeah, I completely agree with a lot of the sentiment that you're saying. I hope it doesn't define him. I mean, you know, it is a large moment, unfortunately, and you know, his speech should have been the moment for him, like you mentioned, where it's like you're the odds on favorite, you know that this is probably coming, and this is how your night's going to be defined, and it's not good. Everybody, just my opinion right off the top, everybody was wrong. And as a person who is or was a stand-up comedian for a decade plus, this does happen in clubs. And I've had people come up to me and try to fight me on stage for, you know, various levels of things. And I'm not even like one of those kind of like shocking comedian stuff. But everyone comes in with their own baggage to these clubs and you don't know what's going on. But this is the Oscars and this is a big stage and everyone knew it. Chris Rock, from what I understand, should be or was aware of Jada Pinkett Smith's condition to why she has her head shaved. So, and this is not the first time that Chris Rock has gotten into it with this particular couple either from previous yes. award shows. So this is a lot of things culminating in a really bad spot. So Chris Rock should have just presented and not done that. The need to just get that out there on a not even a very good joke, you know, is just awful. Then obviously Will Smith's reaction, if it was, you know, more verbal than assault, you know, maybe we're having a different conversation, or if he just obviously took it someplace else, let him bomb the joke. That almost hurts a comedian more than a slap in the face. I'll say that. It's something that is very unfortunate. And I also, there's two other things that have come out of this a little bit too, and I want to kind of address them one by one. And the first one being that the Will Smith thing was good for the Oscars, and because it's like this moment where it got everyone talking and everyone's going to suddenly care about the Oscars. No, not even close. I would say that, you know, people are going to say good things about like a ratings bump that happened from it, or, you know, that they think that it's going to give it attention, that it's going to help the show. It doesn't, because it's artificial. It's not something that's going to happen every year. It doesn't help the show's formatting or the thoughts of the future. And in fact, it actually screws up a lot of information that they're probably going to need, because they did try to change a lot of the formatting this year to try to see what kind of shake they were going to do with the show going forward. And now this all screws it up, because it's going to look like more of a victory because they got a lot of people to come in late in the game to watch what was going to happen after an assault on air. So that doesn't do anything for me. And the other thing is, for the people who thought this was a stunt because the Oscars needed the ratings or any of these things, why would they do that? It serves no one. Will Smith, as we mentioned, was already going to win an award, and, you know, why would he want to do that to jeopardize his night or the way he's going to look after basically getting his due, for a lack of a better term? And then Chris Rock, you know, he looks like an idiot right now who went too far. So why would he want that, especially if he's trying to sell tickets for an upcoming tour, which I think just went on sale this past week? I don't know why he would have done it. And then, of course, the showrunners or producers, why would they do it? Because they're going to look barbaric and potentially racist for pitting these people, of all people, in this moment. So I don't see where that makes sense for anyone. And I don't know if you have any opinion on that, but I just think this thing ultimately will not serve the Oscars or people who actually love movies and want the Oscars to be what they are going forward.
You know, there is a saying that all press is good press, but I don't agree with that. You know, woke up this morning and it was all over the BBC news. It was, you know, you think of what's going on in the Ukraine and around the world, and this was the main headlines. A lot of people will take diskindly to this idea of celebrities with privilege and responsibility, because they have a responsibility as public figures to behave sensibly, to see him, Will Smith, behave in this manner is terrible for the celebrity image. Oh, there they are again, those spoiled celebrities. The joke wasn't acceptable. And you're right, both parties are wrong. And I think it's clear to make that. Both parties are definitely wrong. And then the idea that it was a stunt, like you said, it makes zero sense. And actually that theory is just whack, because it doesn't benefit Will Smith. It doesn't benefit Chris Rock. It doesn't benefit the Oscars. And you can tell it's not a stunt by the sheer stunned nature of the audience and the awkward silence. Yeah. And then the terrible impact that it had on the rest of the show. Like some of the hosts and Amy Schumer, I think, tried to pull sort of people out of the fire and make a joke about, did I miss something? And I thought there was an element to get the show back on its legs. But the UK coverage anyway, which comes from the American stream, when they were looking around at some of the celebrities, some of them looked uncomfortable. And some of the people down the front looked a little bit scared. Questions will be asked on the back of this. And I'm sure we'll get onto the rest of the show. But no, on those two points, not good for the Academy, not good for ratings. And look, it gets people talking about the Oscars, but in a bad way, in a bad way.
Yeah.
And yeah. And for the hardcore fans, you know, who look forward to the award season all year, it's a real disappointment because Coda and the award winners after Will Smith, Chastain included, it just had a dampener on their evening.
Yeah, and shout out to Diddy for trying to turn the tide after you know, Questlove happened. But you're right, it did change the tenor of the evening, and also changed the tenor of Will Smith's speech. Because every time he's talking about, like, I'm here to protect these women or whatever from his, like, it just made me kind of cringe along with everything else. And to have, even if it was a prepared speech of talking about love and positivity and all these other things or family or any of that, God, did that get tainted in a bad way. And a lot of people thought he shouldn't even have been able to come on stage, that he should have been removed from the evening. And, you know, there's some credence to that. There's some credibility to that, sure. But, God, yeah, it's just going to make things uncomfortable for the rest of the evening and for people. And the worst thing is that I thought, and I know you, I obviously follow you online. We talk on Twitter night or on Twitter on Oscar night. And we kind of, you know, a lot of people are going to make various complaints about, you know, the previously awarded, the previous awards, the ones that happened before the taping, you know, kind of being sprinkled in the show. I know you were a person who didn't like that. But what I will say is that the first half of the show, I thought, worked pretty well, considering that, you know, they were doing that, and a lot of people didn't like that. And I thought especially the opening, you know, with the Beyonce song into a monologue with the three women, that actually worked quite well. I thought there were a lot of solid jokes, and into, you know, basically right up until, you know, like Troy Kotsur was that kind of midpoint, high point, you know, in that kind of the middle of the show. And then, boy, there was very little afterwards that I was just like, yep, totally worth it. And unfortunately, that really hurts for a night that should have belonged to Coda, essentially.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you said. I mean, I thought the start of the show was really strong. I found the comedy good. Like, I was laughing. I thought the pace of it was, maybe it was the Red Bull, but it felt really frantic. And I think there was too much going on, but there was lots going on. So there was lots to enjoy. And then I said to myself, maybe it's just too good to be true. And it turned out that it was, because, I mean, obviously you can't predict something like that's going to happen, but it was like a train that just derailed. I thought the presenters and the people accepting the awards did a good job sort of steering the engine or reassembling the train and getting it back on the tracks. But questions will be asked about the whole ceremony, about the length, because I believe it overran. Again, I'm not 100% sure, but I believe it went over what they were planning for it to go over. And as for the eight awards not being presented and finding them out on Twitter, I just think it's so disrespectful to creatives. I think it's so disrespectful to people who many have dedicated their life to this craft, and it's the pinnacle of their career to win an Academy Award. You know, people like myself dream of, you know, sitting in that audience just to get a sense of what it's like to be there. So to win one of those awards must be just overwhelming. And for that not to be aired live, I think was wrong. And to find it out on Twitter was wrong. Hamaguchi, his speech, where he was, you know, the music came on and then he was like, please turn it down. And then they sort of pushed him off the stage. You know, yes, the comedy was good, but at heart, what are we trying to celebrate? It's surely got to be the awards and the awards winners. In my opinion, you know, I know people want to tune in for music and comedy and they want to have Oscars parties and gatherings, but essentially it's about a celebration of film. And I think that was in places lost, none more so than what happened with Will Smith.
Yeah, I think you could do both. I liken the Oscars actually to Major League Baseball here in the States, where it's like, it's got so much prestige in history, and generally it kind of caters to older audiences who hold a candle to a different time, or that they, it just appeals to an older demographic, and that people hate it. They just can't handle it on their end, that like, oh God, we need to get the young people in here. We need to do this. We need to do that. Mm. Nobody was catering the Oscars to me when I was a kid. Like, do you think I give a crap about Billy Crystal or they were old then, practically, to me at least. And it just doesn't seem like it matters. And then baseball kind of doing the same thing, where it's trying to be a faster game, try to be more inclusive to a younger crowd. They're doing a little better job, but it took them a long time to kind of strike the right balance. But they just have to go at some point, like, you know, the people who love it, love it. There's nothing wrong with the game. There's nothing wrong with the Oscars. It's just that maybe over time, people care less about the Oscars. Or people are just like, it used to be something to watch when we didn't have so many options. Or it was not something that I could just find out on the internet or Twitter or the news the next day, and I don't care. So the Will Smith is one of those elements where it's like, okay, this is why we watch live TV, but this is not why I watch this type of live TV. Because a lot of those things that did kind of go off the script, it might have woken you up a little bit, but it was also very cringy and doesn't last well in my head. Mm. So that's what stinks about the whole thing. I want to get kind of positive here. Like, so for you, what are the highlights of last night?
I feel bad for saying this on your podcast, Andrew, because The Power of the Dog lost. But for me, the highlight was seeing this really moving moment. And I think it was when Troy Kotsur won and everyone in the audience, and I'm waving my hands now, and I realize this is a podcast, so no one can see me. But when everyone is... when everyone was waving their hands to celebrate, that was just a warm cuddle for a community that I think is underrepresented, for a community that has really been inspired by this film. So for me, that was the highlight, to see Troy Kotsur and Coda and the deaf community, this amazing piece of filmmaking, be honored and recognized. That was probably the highlight. And I hate to say it, you know, I've got to almost rewatch the show and assess it online and look at some clips and sort of familiarize myself, because so much of it got lost with what happened. And I know you want to keep it positive. So for me, sure. it was that touching moment with Troy Kotsur and Coda winning Best Picture.
I agree. That should have been the story for sure. We mentioned it before too. I thought the musical numbers were actually very good for the most part. I thought the forced, we don't talk about Bruno into trying to talk about the Oscars was very lame. I was like, wait, what are we doing here? It kind of felt weird. But for the most part, I enjoyed the Beyonce opening. I really liked the Billie Eilish Phineas performance into their speech. You know, the whole sibling thing, you can tell they're genuinely excited and genuinely happy for each other, and it felt, you know, very refreshing, especially at that part of the show, because it was pretty deep in there. So of course I did enjoy those, and even Dos Arequitas, I forgot how it's pronounced, the Encanto song.
I think that's spot
that was
on.
Well done. There was definitely a lot of good moments for that, for sure. I also echo your part about the concert stuff and the comedy stuff. I thought the COVID test bit was funny. But again, a lot of those things were funny early. I thought the opening monologue was funny. The COVID test bit was funny. And then, like, a lot of the stuff towards the end of the show felt like forced or just didn't work at all. Because I know I just said I wanted to kind of be positive for a minute, but to add to the lowlights, essentially, versus the highlights outside of Will Smith, the last duel joke segment, which was right around that time, was awful. Yep. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, so they did that segment and then went right into Chris Rock. So it was like, holy crap, this is a dumpster fire after having such a strong start. So it just went south real quick. And then, of course, unfortunately, the Godfather tribute that happened like right after that, too. I had two thoughts. I was like so happy in a way that Diddy kind of saved it and tried to be positive in the room. But then also I immediately went to, wait, he's introducing the Godfather tribute? And then the montage is this, you know, hip hop redux with Diddy's music or people he's been kind of like working with over the years, music. And then you give Francis Ford Coppola like a minute or two to talk. No Robert De Niro's speech, no Al Pacino, no, like, it just seemed ridiculous that we flew past that when it means so much. And that's why when it's like, okay, Amy Schumer dangling being Spider-Man, fine. Could have given like an extra minute to
totally
that
agree.
Segment or give an extra minute to I don't know, any Bond to be there to talk about the Bond tribute at some point, that would be great. I also talked to you a little bit off air, it's like some really tough moments, like with Jane Campion pouring cold water on the whole Kevin Costner intense kind of dramatic lead up to the Best Director award, and you know, god, some like really forced things in there with the jokes, some of the social political stuff. And again, I'm as liberal as you could possibly be, and yet some of these things where I was just like, okay, I get it. I know it's a big stage, but you know, it always seems like the Oscars has to be something more, and I never understood that. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, and I felt a lot of the ones last night didn't fully work for me. Anything else for you for like kind of lowlights besides what I mentioned or Will Smith or any of that?
Yeah, well, I've got to mention one of my favorite actors and supporting actor nominee, Jesse Plemons. That bit where Amy Schumer removed Kirsten Dunst. Like, you could see Plemons looked awkward, and then he was like, "Where's the punchline? Where's the joke?" And she was like, "That was the joke." And he was like, "Oh, you know, he did well not to sort of cringe." Like you said, it felt like, I mean, when you described it as a dumpster fire, that honestly made me, as you know, laugh a lot. But it just and then the fire brigade came in and the hose didn't work, and it was just a bit of, do you know what I mean? Like, it was just a real mess. But the overall show, it just felt like they were trying to, it was like if you had a fireworks display and instead of planning it, you just thought, I'm going to buy as many fireworks as humanly possible and just light them by throwing a grenade into it. And let's just see what the hell happens. Like, it was a bit messy. It was almost underplanned, but maybe overproduced. Like I said, for me, it took a long time to get into some of the awards. Like, I put on Twitter, you know, get on with it. You know, where's the awards? Other podcasts and more analysis will probably look at how long the first award took, but it took a long time. So it was a mixture of high and low lights, but a dumpster fire is the highlight of my week, I have to say.
Wouldn't it be so much like last year, I thought was a terrible broadcast too, but it's weird. Like, when last year we're like, remember when Glenn Close did the butt? And that was like the conversation. It seems so quaint. Considering where we
so
turned
innocent.
Around. Yeah. But there's how do you feel about maybe the industry part of this, where, like, you know, the awards kind of went to a smattering. Like, it was a big night for Dune as well. I actually underestimated Dune a little bit. Kind of maybe also tied into the hopes of, you know, The Power of the Dog not winning just one award. But do you find it interesting that we're now going to talk about in the next segment, like, the whole Netflix versus Apple thing, but do you also find it funny that, like, HBO Max was not punished whatsoever for the day and date that everyone hated so much? Yet there might be a conversation to be had that, like, Netflix is still being punished for just being the biggest streamer. Isn't that, like, this world doesn't make sense to me right now. And maybe finally we've now gotten to a point where it's like even playing field, where it's like we're just talking about the credibility of the movies and the likability of these movies.
Yeah. So do you mean sort of assess the movies on their merit, not where they've come from, kind of thing?
Yeah, I'm hoping that's where we finally got, because, you know, essentially all the studios have their own streaming service and nobody's going to punish them for doing these day and date things, you know, outside of maybe the creators themselves. And then, you know, Apple and Netflix were the one and two competing entries for an Oscar season. So have we kind of maybe just leveled the playing field finally?
I think that is a tough question. The playing field is certainly more level, but we'll get on to Netflix and how Netflix go forward from this. But whatever way you look at it, Netflix had a bad night. And I don't think that's, I don't think it's necessarily because they were a streamer. I think you've been hitting the nail on the head, and it's amazing. I've come on your podcast a couple of times and I've been the positive one saying, yeah, The Power of the Dog this and Netflix that. And you warned me, you were like, it's a bummer. It's a bummer. And I think that is ultimately what has cost it. Where Netflix go from here, I just don't know, because my understanding, and obviously you're the Netflix guru, but my understanding is Netflix campaigned really well for The Power of the Dog. I don't think you can criticize them for their campaign. It may actually just be the material and this momentum that Coda got, this feel-good momentum that I think they wanted this Oscars to be about on the back of a pandemic. They wanted it to be a feel-good Oscars. That's what my understanding is of what they were shooting for.
Yeah, and if you're Netflix, you know, We talked about it on the last show, and this is where you were saying, like, oh, I tried to be positive for you and all this stuff. 27 nominations for Netflix going into the night. One win. We had the over-under at about 4.5 based on their previous success. And even things like the shorts, where, like, me and you did the full breakdown of the documentary short category, where they had 3 of the 5 nominations.
Yeah.
And people barely even watch these things. You figure if they're on Netflix, that makes it easier for people to watch them. And yet they still didn't win that category. So, gosh, that has to sting real hard if you're Netflix. They campaigned really hard. And I think those are kind of two prevailing thoughts for me with the whole how Netflix turned out on the night. From what I hear from other people, especially in a long Oscar season like this, where it's like kind of an extended an extra month, they heard about Power of the Dog since the summer, you know, like late summer into the fall. Like, gosh, that's 6 months, 7 months. That's a long time. And then Netflix never took their foot off the gas. That, from what I understand, you know, they have, like, billboards all the way up and down in L.A., you know, trying to, you know, drum up interest in this movie. And then when it finally came out to a mass audience, you kind of started to be like, all right, well, the critics seem to love it. But then if you saw, like, the scores online for audiences, people were kind of baffled by it, you know, or turned it off because it's Netflix. So they're just going to, like, whatever. Yeah. It's gone. So they didn't really even give the film a chance if they want to. And it's another film. This happened to The Irishman a little bit because it was 3 hours long. So many jokes of, like, yeah, it took me 7 tries, but I finally finished this movie, you know? Or like, what season of The Irishman are you on? Like, so many people made mockery of that, you know? Even though here we are with Drive My Car and nobody says a word. So it's odd that that kind of was the shakeout. I think just people got exhausted of Power of the Dog because it wasn't a strong enough mass appeal film to sustain 6 months, 7 months of marketing. So if anything, Netflix might just do what essentially seemed, which is odd because Coda started at Sundance.
Yes.
And so it's been over a year that this has been in the public consciousness to, like, at least the larger film fans. And yet, for some reason, it felt like a late breaker because people don't have Apple TV a lot. There's like, it's a small subscriber base. So it didn't get this massive look like, say, Power of the Dog or Don't Look Up did. And then, you know, they waited until after, you know, after the new year, after, or like, once all these award things came out, like, people finally maybe started getting around to seeing it. And then, bam, now it's got all of this momentum, and then it goes all the way to the Oscars. It kind of felt like The Father in that respect from last year, where it was like, yeah, that was a Sundance movie. And then all of a sudden, you know, Anthony Hopkins and all these other, you know, awards that they won on the night seems like, wow, where did this come from? Because they didn't release it in theaters until, you know, after the new year. They tried the 1917 approach. And even further along, I think. And gosh, it worked well for them. And now it worked really well for Coda and Apple here. And it's interesting. There's a lot of questions of, like, what does this mean for Apple? I think Apple's just really smart about it. And they're going to probably do this, you know, one or two big thing. You know, they're going to have Killers of the Flower Moon next year, the Martin Scorsese film. They'll probably just be like, all right, we got what we wanted. We got that. We got Cha-Cha Real Smooth at a Sundance. That's going to be our big push, you know, probably at some point. And that'll do. And that's probably smart because that's honestly kind of what Netflix used to do. And now Netflix, because they have their own studio and they want to be, you know, more cash positive, they care more about the ones that they're going to make in their own studio than maybe acquiring things out of, you know, say, Toronto or out of Sundance or out of some of these other ones and then take it the distance. The only one that kind of felt like that way this year was The Lost Daughter was an acquisition in the summer that they took forward. But other than that, you know, there are three biggies that went forward were Tick, Tick, Boom, Don't Look Up, and Power of the Dog. And those were all in-house projects, whole cloth. So, you know, 4.5 didn't work, buddy. one win on the night. It's a lot of hurt. I think if anything, they just got, you know, killed by a year where the crowd pleaser won. If you consider Dune a crowd pleaser because it was the populist choice because it did well at the box office, you know, between that, King Richard, and Coda, that was the night. And I don't know what you feel about Tammy Faye, but that, throw that in, throw Cruella in, like, it was a lot of, like, the crowd-pleasing films because, as I told you, the bummers are going to lose when you're coming out of a hard pandemic. Do you feel like, you know, my unfortunate, you know, canary in the coal mine, you know, approach of the award season actually came true?
You, everything you said is absolutely spot on. And the Power of the Dog, basically, when you're at the front, you've got a big target on your back. And it's the front runner syndrome. It was quite far ahead. Looking back at when we were discussing last time, its percentage chance of winning was really quite high from a betting perspective.
65%, David, the last time you were on. And Coda's was 3.5% behind even Licorice Pizza at the time.
That's what the betting market suggests. So then it looked like a big surprise. But what happened was, Coda won SAG Ensemble, and when that ensemble cast came together and gave their speeches, it empowered people, and suddenly the bummer was in trouble. And like you said, you know, there's been a lot of jokes. Craig made the joke on our predictions episode. He said it took him 3 days to get through it, and I laughed. Yeah. But and I was listening to a space with Clayton Davis, and he said that many Academy voters couldn't get through it. And that's a problem. That is a real problem, particularly for a Netflix film. Like if Power of the Dog, if you're watching it in a cinema, you've paid for your ticket, you'll go down with the ship. But I said on my first ever review of The Power of the Dog, which I regretted, and now I somewhat stand by, sort of see me jumping ship here, was that it had, because if you listen before, you know, I said it had a major pacing issue. And I think ultimately, you know, that has been its downfall. And you're absolutely right about Dune as well. Look at some of the categories where it could have competed, particularly cinematography and score, you know.
Yeah.
And those things, which the score from Johnny Greenwood was amazing, the cinematography from Ari Wegner, and there was a good narrative there for the first female to win for cinematography. So there was positive narratives, but you had the crowd pleaser in Coda. You had the box office sensation in, I believe it was anyway, or very well at the box office, big blockbuster Dune.
Yeah.
And they just basically just swamped the leader and The Power of the Dog. Yeah, I just feel for you, buddy. Yeah, the dog. A greyhound analogy. It's like the rabbit came off and the greyhound just fell off the track. Do you know what I mean? Like the last minute, the dog just swerved off the track. And Netflix will have to, I don't know what they do now. I'm sorry to sort of move it on to a different thing, but I don't know what their approach is, because like you said, in the documentary short, they had three nominations, you know, and I thought Audible, Three Songs for Benazir and Lead Me Home were all brilliant pieces of work. But again, bummers, you know, apart from Audible, they were tough watches. So I don't know how Netflix goes forward from this, but you know, their conversion rate has gone for this year was 3%. The over under was at 4.5. So I was expecting Netflix to win in the region of 4 or 5 Oscars. One is very disappointing for them, really is.
Yeah, especially for Power of the Dog. I think they really thought they had it. And to be honest, to be fair to them, if this Oscars happened where it normally does, like at the mid to late February date, you probably would have had it win. And because when you were on, nobody was talking about Coda at that point. So if you're talking, you know, again, because the precursors, that's a whole other conversation for another day and probably a more Oscar centric podcast. But gosh, the precursors don't seem to be this really telling thing until the very end the same way, or at least it's not the prior history seems to be changing all the time. And so that's why I waited all the way until PGA until I was like, Coda's going to win. And even then people didn't want to be sold because they're like, look at all this data from the whole year. It's like, it doesn't matter because nobody saw Coda, you know, or at least like, or they saw it at Sundance and then it completely, you know, fell out of their brain. And then when we start getting back into the Oscars conversation, it's like, whoa, what's this Coda thing? Oh, yeah, I forgot about them. Oh, yeah, I like that. And then it just completely steamrolled everybody in a few weeks' time, it feels like.
Sorry, I think Coda's biggest obstacle actually was to get nominated. I genuinely do believe that. I think for it to get nominated, that was its biggest hurdle. And once it had overcome that hurdle, it put itself in a you know, it gave itself a puncher's chance. And
Summer of Soul, honestly, is kind of the same thing. I didn't want to pick Summer of Soul because the documentary feature branch seems to not like picking stuff with archival footage, or they also don't like picking the popular choice either. They always end up going for something smaller or more heavy drama. But if you look at it, it's usually those films don't get the nomination, so they don't even have a chance to win the Oscar. And that's why things like Octopus Teacher happen, where it's like, this is the more palatable documentary and a popular Netflix choice wins. And people are like, whoa, why didn't, like, say Dick Johnson is Dead or some of these other Netflix ones happen? Because they didn't even get nominated. I think if they got nominated, that's when it turns the tide. And I think that's exactly what happened with things like Coda. And even, you know, I think Worst Person in the World and Drive My Car were big winners, even though they, you know, Drive My Car obviously won an award and Worst Person in the World didn't. But I think so many people saw those movies just because they did get multiple nominations. So you could say that is the power of the Oscars, and I love that, you know.
Yeah.
If you want to take away some positivity at the end of this podcast. But, you know, it is interesting about, you know, I don't think Netflix needs to change too much going forward. If anything, I think they just haven't had the luck. Like, in the past, you can say maybe people are like, oh, well, we wanted to punish Netflix, or we wanted to punish the streamers or whatever. That, I think, has been ripped off. Now you're either seeing A, people truly have just a Netflix bias, and it's not about streaming. It's just literally about the team at Netflix, maybe about their marketing practices or, you know, you name it. I'm not in the industry fully for that. So you can, I'm just going based off of what I'm hearing more than what I know to be true or people's direct feelings. But, you know, I think, you know, in the past we said like, oh, they have too many movies and it spreads it too thin. And this year I thought they did a really good job of kind of like cementing Power of the Dog as their dog in the fight. And it didn't work out for them because ultimately it was judged as a film to not be what the people wanted in a given year. So does that make Netflix flawed? No, you know? They just haven't gotten that film, you know, in the past. If you wanted to tell me Roma suffered because of the Netflix effect, sure. You want to tell me Irishman failed because, fatigue with their marketing, because that was very, very, very heavily marketed. Maybe. Sure. But also that was the Parasite year. So like, and same thing happened with Marriage Story. They got their win, you know. And that's probably the best that movie was going to do. Who knows? And then, you know, Mank and Trial of the Chicago 7, I feel like those don't have any lingering conversations. So what do we talk about? And Roma, if anything, it was long enough ago that you could probably say maybe they were being punished for being a Netflix film. Maybe they were only being rewarded in best foreign language film at the time. It's now best international feature because they could for Roma, and they gave it to somebody else for best picture because they were like, well, look, we gave them these other awards. It doesn't need best picture, quote unquote. So there was a lot of explanations on some of those past best picture losers, not past nominees that lost for best picture. This one feels different. This one feels like, you know, it got judged as a film, which is good. But also has to hurt real bad when they're considered the front runner for so long.
Yeah. You know, there's a saying about don't count your chickens before they've hatched. And I'm not saying Netflix did that, but there was a sense. And I was baffled when Coda won PGA, and you mentioned the precursors and how much of an effect they have, because that's a preferential ballot. I was like, surely Coda is now the front runner. The betting markets did reflect that come Oscars Sunday. Coda did become the favorite. I was shocked that some people were sticking by the Power of the Dog, but they were sticking with those statistics, the maths, the logic. And sometimes we can, you know, those GIFs where you see people surrounded by papers and graphs and documents, and there's test tubes boiling, and people are people have got weighing scales and they're losing their minds. I'm that person, but yeah. I jumped ship. And actually, I've sort of got to thank you, because I wouldn't have jumped ship if it wasn't for being on your show, because I think you've clearly been stating very eloquently throughout the season what the problems with the Power of the Dog would be. And unfortunately, it's come to fruition. You know, everything you've said has come to fruition, particularly with it being a bummer and the pacing issues. And it just gets added to that long list of, you know, Roma with, you know, 10 noms and 3 wins, and Mank 10 noms, 2 wins. You can add the Power of the Dog, 12 noms, 1 win. Yeah. Whatever way you look at it, whatever studio had this film, you would be disappointed. But like I said, it went against a crowd pleaser and then a nominations and undercard juggernaut in Dune. And you're spot on. You need an element of luck. And, you know, the stars have to align. And I think they will align for Netflix. I do think Netflix will win Best Picture. I might be grey with a long beard, but it will it will definitely happen. And, you know, it's all the more fun for sort of listening to the Nomcast along the way.
Yeah, we're going to try to stay current and try to keep you going. And obviously, we're going to have probably an episode soon about this kind of like, you know, Netflix State of the Union, or at least like a prestige Oscar kind of award season outlook for what we're going to come. That'll probably come, I don't know, in the next few months or whatever. Yeah. Usually we do it earlier, but I feel like we miss out on a lot of things if we don't hold it until at least the summer, where we kind of see some of the early festival stuff or what some of the buzz is, or what is actually, you know, going to come out. You know, David Fincher's The Killer probably not going to make it to the end of 2022, but we'll see how it goes. Right now, you know, the movies that people think are going to be in the Oscar conversation next year, really only White Noise for you know, Noah Baumbach's film seems to be the Netflix one to look forward to next year. Outside of that, very much speculative in terms of what's going to actually land. They have a few biopics. The Blonde, you know, Andrew Dominik's Blonde is, you know, coming out where they might have a NC-17 rating on a streamer. So that's going to be wild to see, especially after Ana de Armas just had Deepwater come out too, where it's like, it's going to be an interesting year for her for sure. But, you know, again, Scorsese's at Apple, you know, you got a bunch of other, you know, whether it be streamers or, you know, studios that have some big time stuff, the Harvey Weinstein, biopic. It's not about him. It's about like his accusers and all that stuff. It's called She Said, I believe. That one's big. Yeah. The Olivia Wilde movie. So there's a bunch of stuff that is going to be interesting, but not a lot of them are Netflix. So we'll see how that shakes out.
I just wanted to say, as the Duke of Bettingham that I am,
please give it to me.
You won't believe this, but I've managed to source a betting market for Oscars 2023. The favorite is Canterbury Glass at 7-1. Oh,
the David O.
Killers
Russell
of the Flat. Killers of the Flower Moon is also there, 7-1. Babylon, 10-1. She Said, 12-1. The Fabelmans, 14-1. The Sun, 14-1. And White Noise is in there at 20-1 in the betting. So it's in the conversation. I'm sorry to hit you with the Duke of Bettingham's odds so early in the season. But, you know, that's amazing that we already have sort of a bit of a an idea of what could be playing in award season next year. But White Noise is there, so is that that'll be the one we'll have to jump on the bandwagon, Andrew, and really cheer home.
Yeah, and so before we go, because I think we kind of covered a lot of the stuff that I wanted to cover for today, but, you know, where did your bets land? Because you were all over the map. I never believed in the Penelope Cruz thing. I'm happy I was right with the Chastain thing. And there was a lot of movement, late movement that could have been construed that maybe you did or did not jump in on. Tell me, what was your best bet and the worst bet? Like your heartbreaking, like worse than the Lady Gaga from a year ago bet, but something right now.
Well, I put a video up on Twitter. So I had been adamant for 6 to 8 weeks that West Side Story was going to win costumes. I had convinced myself that the costumes in that were great. It was 16-1. So if you understand betting, you understand that that's a very, well, it's a 16-1 chance. It's unlikely. So that was heartbreaking. And you're absolutely right. You know, Penelope Cruz went from 25-1 into 5-2, a huge move, which means that a lot of people in Vegas, a lot of people in the States, here in the UK, had money on Penelope Cruz. And the problem is once you see that line moving, people jump on it and the line gets shorter and shorter and shorter. That didn't land. Cinematography, The Power of the Dog, there was a lot of late money for that. That didn't land. Actually, most of the gambles didn't land. So in terms of bummers, I had a real bummer. but I do feel a little bit guilty because I did have a little bet on Coda at 20-1 just before SAG Ensemble. just for the fact that it was the feel good film and it was in it to win it, you know, and you've got to be in it to win it. And like I said, once Coda was in it, it could win it. And I wish I had a time machine so I could just go back and just unload the salary on Coda and walk away a very rich man. But, you know, the Oscars betting's good fun, but questions will be asked about why all these gambles went astray. You know, is it idiots like me that convince themselves they know everything and then, you know, follow the line? And a lot of people did jump ship from Chastain to Cruz. A lot of people did. Including myself.
That was wide open, though. I don't blame them. That was a very wide open field.
Yeah, that was wide open. I mean, people will subsequently tell you it was locked up and Chastain was never losing. I don't believe that. I think that was a very, very close race, and the betting market reflected that. But you talked about luck earlier. You need an element of luck. When these books open early in the season, you know, if you can get on at a good price and follow it home, but you need an element of luck, because with Oscar's puzzle theory and it's, you know, I need inside knowledge. I need to pay someone in the academy to tell me who's going to win. I need to be some sort of like gangster.
So now you are known as a person who took an early bet last year with Lady Gaga winning best actress for House of Gucci. Do you have anything circled right now? And can I tip you on on Adam Driver best actor for White Noise?
to answer your question, no, I don't have anything lined up yet. Literally the market I told you is one book in the UK is opened.
Right.
I'm going to have a little bit of a break from studying these lines. The Duke of Bettingham will go on. The Duke of Bettingham will go on a sabbatical in the English countryside, but I will be back. So I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be an interesting season next year. But at the moment, no, there's nothing really that has jumped out at me. You know, I'm still recovering from this award season.
As you should. You need some sleep after a long night last night and a long season that we've all been suffering through. Thanks again, David, for coming on. Tell the people maybe what is in store for the Is It Worth It film podcast that people should already be listening to if you listen to David on this podcast, or if you've heard me on there on the road to the Oscars, or any of those good reasons to check into a very good show. What do you got going on, David?
Yeah, so you can follow me at @OneDavidLong on Twitter. I'd really appreciate a follow, or at Film Is Worth It. I'll be doing a road to the Oscars end of the road. I haven't got a guest lined up yet, but I've got a few people in mind, and that will be very similar to this. We'll do an analysis of what happened at the Oscars and why. We'll have a look forward to next season. We probably will dive into certain awards and categories a little bit more. And then in terms of Is It Worth It, the film review podcast, the main show, Craig's still having a little bit of a break because he's getting married later in the year. Big shout out to Craig. But we've got some big reviews coming up, and I've got some big guests lined up. Things like Jurassic Park, the new Jurassic Park, we're going to be reviewing in June. We're going to be doing big one-off movie reviews. So do keep an eye out for that. We basically let you know if films are worth seeing. So if you want to know what's worth seeing in the cinema and you want to hear a madman from the UK tell you, then please come and join us at Is It Worth It, the Film Review Podcast.
Definitely. I am always an avid listener, and I love having you on the show. And thanks for helping me get through this season, whether people care about the Oscars or not, we do. And we will keep bringing it to people as often as we can. Thanks again, David, for coming on.
Really appreciate it, Andrew. Thank you.